Session number 26579.
Mr. Clark, Reel 4. We're talking about the final exercise on the moors while you were at Hayton Camp. Tell me about that. What exactly was it?
Now, what happened was this, that we, at the culmination of our training, we were sent up to a place called Colliston Moors.
Colliston would be...
Colliston, C-O-L-L-I-E-S-T-U-N, Colliston Moors.
And what was the nature of this?
The nature of this was to actually prove that our training had been successful. Inasmuch as we went up there and it was all field firing, all sort of little exercises designed so that we could attack targets, dummy targets, but using live ammunition, i.e. rifles, machine guns, mortars, grenades, everything. And it was just the culmination of our training, and to just check that we'd grasped everything that we'd been taught. And this, we lived out in the open. We lived rough out in the open then in little bivouac tents. And once again, the weather was absolutely brutal. And we had to spend 10 days there doing all the exercise and field firing. When that was finished, we then had to march back to Aberdeen, which was, I believe, about 40 miles, 50 miles, in 3 days. And as we were going along the routes, we were being attacked. There was enemy laid out, and we marched along in sections. And as we were getting to certain areas, there'd be enemy firing, but they would fire blanks, simple reason, because we were coming into built-up areas. But with all these ambushes laid on, to see how quickly we could react, and it took us 3 days to march back to Aberdeen.
How realistic was it, do you think?
Sorry?
How realistic was it, do you think?
It was very realistic. And as I say, we were all sort of geared up for all this. It was like a football and training now. This was really up for it, ready to take on any enemy, and we were so enthusiastic. The psychology behind the whole training was fantastic, because when I think back to from Buchanan Street Station in Glasgow to here, to the end of my training, I was a totally different bloke, totally different person.
You were really pleased with the whole thing then?
Delighted, yeah, delighted. I mean, sometimes we cursed it. I mean, at times we were so shattered and we cursed it, but that's when everybody hung together. When things got tough, then we actually came out on top.
Now, I did miss just one thing, so let's put it in. I know it's at the end, but bayonet training. Were you still doing bayonet training?
I omitted bayonet training. I must say, I was very enthusiastic about it.
Can you tell us what it was?
It was basically you had these sandbag dummies on wooden constructions. And they represented the enemy. And when you went forward, the drill was in, out, and guard, pass through. And you just lunged at the enemy, stuck your bayonet in him, withdrew the bayonet, and then you went to the high port with your rifle, and then back on guard position again.
Now, were you encouraged to do the shouting?
You had to go crazy. Foam at the mouth and everything. I mean, this if you didn't shout and scream, you didn't get into the... You didn't get into the spirit of the thing,
Now, the other thing is, in the old regulars, pre-war, they used to spend quite a bit of time bayonet fencing, using bringing the butt through and things like that. And did you do any of that?
No, we didn't do any of that at that stage, no.
Did you think the bayonet was still a serious... you said you were keen on it, the exercise, but did you think the bayonet was still a serious weapon of war at the time?
Without a doubt. I mean, once you put an attack in on a target... And then close quarters with enemy, the bayonet was very effective. And I think it's fair to say that the British Army were renowned for their bayonet fighting. They used to the enemy used to flee when they seen the cold steel,
So it was effective.
Oh, very effective, I would say. Yeah.
Now, so what happened then? I mean, you'd done the exercises on Colliston Moors, and then that was the end. What happened then?
From then, we came back and we had We didn't have a pass out parade because the camp wasn't designed for that kind of thing. But what we did have was a big massive kit inspection in the gymnasium, where all our kits were laid out, and would NCOs with tape, who you'd say, right, blankets and your bedding block was put down. This is, you take everything to the gym, and they would line up your bedding. Right, shirts, and everything was lit. It was a massive exercise in bullshit, full stop, like, you know, because then the CO would come round and carry out an inspection. And when that inspection was finished, that was you, we passed out.
And was there any point to this final kit inspection? I mean, or was it just a...
I would say what the exercise would be this, that the commanding officer, it was probably to cover his tracks, to make sure that your equipment was in good nick before you went to your battalion or whatever.
Now, when did you finish? Would it be 10 weeks? Would it February to May? Or would it
be
June?
Yeah, that's right, around about then.
So, what happened then? This is May 46.
Yep. And then I went straight on leave then. I think it was just 10 days leave I got.
Now, tell me about when you went home on leave. I don't know whether that'd be your first leave.
That was my first leave,
How did it... I mean, I know there were a lot of soldiers about. It's just after the war. But how did it feel going home on leave? Were you in your uniform? What was it like?
I felt dead chuffed. I was absolutely chuffed. And see, that during that time as well, there was... Most of the servicemen wore their uniforms all the time. See, we still hadn't got over the war yet, and people were still walking about in uniform. In fact, a lot of the guys didn't have civvies that fitted them. They had to wear the uniform. But when I'm at home, I was quite chuffed. I wanted to go to bed in uniform, kind of thing, you know.
You were proud.
That's right, absolutely proud of it, you know. And
what about your family, your grandparents?
My grandmother, they were dead against me going to the army, believe me. They were dead against it.
Why was that?
But, well, it was all this old, see, the pre-war. If you were a soldier, you were a scrounger. You were a bone idle. That was the attitude the civilians had toward the soldier. They thought the soldiers was a very lazy life. And my grandmother, she thought in these terms, like, you know. Mind you, she had three sons. Uncle John was fought in the Scots Guards in the First War, Uncle Jimmy in the Royal Navy, and Uncle Davy in the Cameroonians. And then the youngest son, he in RAF in the Second War, like, you know. So she said, but these laddies were fighting in the war, like, you know, but you don't need to go fighting anywhere, like, you know. Little did you know. Little did I know.
So she was pretty upset. What about your mother? My mother,
she was the same. My mother and I were never sort of close. I don't know why.
Your grandparents more for you.
My grandparents were my fat. But even later on in life, my mum was a funny woman. She didn't take to my wife.
we'll perhaps, you know. Yeah. But so, you know, you'd gone against your grandparents then, really.
Oh, I'd gone against them, yeah.
Now, when you went back on leave, was there a bit of...
Oh, they were proud of me, like, you know, she said, oh, come in, son, you know. She was dead chuffed. And then it was just from there.
So they eventually came round,
your
grandparents?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, yeah.
And what about your friends? Were they impressed by the fact you... Because you didn't have to join them.
Oh, very much so.
You could have waited till you were called.
Well, funny enough, most of my friends were all called up by this time. They were all away in the forces themselves. So I didn't have many friends left, you know, from school and that.
Now, so that was your leave, a couple of weeks, was it?
10 days leave.
And then what was your next posting? Because this would be your first real posting, wouldn't
it? Yeah, well, I was then posted to the 10th Holding Battalion. Down in Dumfriesshire.
Now, did that have a parent regiment? Was that?
No. This was this was a unit. It was for a holding battalion. It was guys going there waiting to join the battalions.
And which town was it?
Every regiment.
Which town was it?
Let me see now. Oh God. Down in Dumfriesshire.
That'll do.
It'll come to me.
And
Anyway, I was sent down there.
And this would be about June, would it?
May? June, yeah. And I messed about there for several weeks.
Now, what were you doing?
Not a lot. It was just guard duties in Dumfries. And there was nothing. The CO was a character. He was a bloke called Lieutenant Colonel Kelly. If you spoke to him, the first thing he said to me, "What's your name?" You said Clarkson. "No, what's your first name?" Apparently, during the war, a couple of privates had saved his life. And he vowed he'd never. He used to walk around about on a big white horse. We'd all be on parade in the morning, and he'd come along with his big white horse. Wonderful guy. So I spent some time there, and then there was a big panic come on one morning. And one evening, actually, 8 o'clock at night, I was in the company I was in, was all paraded, and was said to go and pack our kits to report to the cookhouse at 10 o'clock, and we're going to an unknown destination. Panic station, like, you know, oh, God. And what happened was, the word got around that we were going to Canada to bring back German prisoners of war to this country, ready for onward transmission to Germany. So we were all dead chuffed. And we paraded about, we had an evening meal, and then we had to parade about 3 o'clock with all our kit. And we went to the three tonners piled into that lot. And we started driving off, and nobody would tell us where we were going. But this rumour had spread that we were going to Canada. And when we get onto the Ayrshire coast, we're down at a town called, coming down at a town called Largs, which I knew very well. I said, "Lads, that's it. We'll go down onto the Greenock Road there, to the docks at Greenock, and we've won the big ship." That was it. Off we went. And as we got along the Greenock Road, we turned in right into this naval camp, HMS Warren.
Warren.
In this naval camp. Right, D-bus, get off the trucks and that. And there was all these Nissen huts laid out for us. It was all sailors. Packed with sailors, a navy camp. And we were allocated rooms. And then this young officer got us all together and said, "Right," he said, "forget this stupid nonsense about going to Canada. You've arrived." And what it was, during the war, two ammunition ships had blown up in the Clyde. And this was the ships were breaking up now, and ammunition was coming up onto the shore, washing up onto the shore. And it was just about near the start of the Scottish holiday season, and the authorities wanted all these bombs cleared up. So what they did was they put the large beaches out of bounds to the civilians. And we had to go along with two shifts, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And we had to go along and pick up all these bombs, shells, whatever. And there were trucks would come along the road, and we would load the ammunition onto the trucks. And the trucks would take them up into the hills above Largs, quite high hills, where there was they dug big trenches, and Polish engineers, sappers, blew them up and then covered them in. And we did that for about 2 months.
That would be what, July to?
Yeah. July till the end of August.
End of August till? July to the end of August, yeah. Sorry.
And then during that time, we've been there.
Was it dangerous? Was it dangerous? Because, been in the water a fair while.
No, not really. No, nobody told us it was dangerous. We just said, pick these things up and load them on the trucks, and that was it. And but there was always a couple of sappers with us, you know, to just check everything was okay. Anyway, while we'd been there, the 10th Holden Battalion, Annan, the 10th Holden Battalion at Annan, in the Freeshire,
Annan,
had closed down. And the battalion, what was left of the battalion, had moved up to Dundonald Camp in Ayrshire. And when our job was finished in Largs, we then moved on to Dundonald Camp in Ayrshire, where I we just did we didn't do a lot there. We used to go out and help farmers sent out to work with German prisoners of war to help bring the crops in, like, you know.
What was that like?
For a few weeks, and then I was sent to the 2nd Battalion.
Did you enjoy that work?
Did indeed, funnily enough, because we got some smashing food. The farmer's wife, big house. The farmer's wife had this big, I think there was 4 German prisoners and 4 of us. And she'd mashed a lovely big bowls of potatoes, boiled and mashed potatoes. We fed terrific, like, you know. And then, that's right, I then got, I got 14 days embarkation leave in between there sometime, so that I could be sent to the 1st Battalion in India. But then I come back off my leave and they said, sorry, your draft's been cancelled. I said, oh, smashing up the other embarkation leave again, like, you know. So then I was then, around about September. I was posted down to the School of Infantry at Warminster. Pardon me, to join the 2nd Battalion, who were then Demonstration Battalion at the School of Infantry.
Now, what were your first impressions when you joined? That was the 2nd Battalion.
2nd Battalion. We went into a camp called Nook Camp.
Nook?
Nook Camp. N-O-O-K, Nook Camp. Just outside of Warminster.
And what were your first impressions of the 2nd Battalion?
It wasn't... Oh, brilliant. I mean, the battalion was going through... It was transforming the battalion. With a lot of the wartime guys in the battalion were waiting for the mob. And I was part of the new intakes coming in to replace these chaps, because the battalion was... I'd been told we were moving to Gibraltar. So, Nook Camp... It was fairly comfortable. We were in Nissen huts. And we were stationed out. We weren't actually in the School of Infantry. We were actually in a place called Hatesbury, a little village called Hatesbury, that's where we were billeted. But we used to have to go and transport into Warminster to do any demonstrations of various places all over Wiltshire.
What was it like being a demonstration? What would you do as demonstration battalion?
Well, my company, especially, was specialised in range work, range marking and river crossing. Now, we would give a demo. You would have a course at the School of Infantry that consisted of officers from all over the world, foreign officers and everything. And we would go down to the ranges there and we'd teach these guys, we would demonstrate how marking in the butts, how you marked in the butts. We'd have a line of guys firing and we'd be in the butts marking.
Now tell me how you did that.
All you did was you'd a wooden pole with a big white disc at the top, and if a guy scored a bull, you just put the disc up to the pointed to the bull. If he scored an inner, you would wave the disc from left to right twice and place it where the bullet had arrived. If it was an inner, a magpie next, you twiddled it black and white and pointed where the bullet was. If it was an outer, you waved the thing twice across the target and placed it where the bullet was. If it was a miss, if you knew it was a miss, then up would go the red flag.
Now, how could you see where it had gone? You just explain.
You see the bullet, you to watch the target, and you see the bullet arriving.
Just coming through the... Was it...
That's
what
right.
Was it? Wood or paper? Or what was the
it
target?
It was this, a paper, that was all.
So reinforced
paper. Oh, dead easy to see, yeah. And the target was a big target, 4-foot targets. You had 2 targets, 4-foot and 6-foot. But 4-foot was a normal. And you could see it, no bother. And you hear the crack in the thump, the crack of the rifle thump, crack thump, and you knew the bullet had arrived, like, you know. What was it used to say? Up she comes, the colour's red, and the marker's spitting blood. With an old saying in the butts. That was our company.
Now, which company were you?
I was C Company, Charlie Company.
Now, what were your first impressions of C? Who was the characters in your company? Who was the company commander?
The company commander was a guy called Major Greaves.
Is that G-R-E-A?
G-R-I-E-V-E-S, Greaves.
And what was Major Greaves like?
He was a smashing block, really good company commander. He was of the old school. He was a pre-war officer. He'd served in India and Burma.
Now, what made for you a good company commander? I mean, all right, from the old school, but what was it that made a good company commander?
I've always said that a good company commander was a person who looked after his men, who led by example, but also not to get too familiar. I never like to see a company commander, especially, get too familiar with the men. I also detested company commanders when there weren't many of them, only about one, I think, I remember, or two, who would have cliques around them. It has been known that some officers did have little cliques, you know, NCOs, senior NCOs around them, and I always avoided that. To me, as I said, I think it was only about one or two officers throughout all my service that I knew who did this, but apart from that, I never had any problems with company commanders. Always gone exceptionally well with company commanders.
Now, what about the more junior officers? You know that you're
yeah, junior officers. Well,
listen, I'm talking about when you're a raw recruit. I mean, young trained soldier.
Yeah, I had the thing about young officers. I'm talking from the point of view of the senior NCO now.
No. I mean, when you're a young.
no problem. I thought they were good, and once again they were very good. They always seemed to me to be come from a very higher education level, higher, upper class as it were, and they were excellent officers. You know, they went to top schools and all that, and I found that they made damn good officers.
Did they know the stuff? You know,
tactics. They knew their stuff, yeah.
Were they as fit as you were, themselves?
Probably fitter, some of them. Probably fitter, yeah.
And now, what about the NCOs? What about them? I'm talking about, you know, from your perspective, as a young private. Yeah. I'm not talking about later. Yeah. Rifleman.
In the 2nd Battalion, the NCOs I had in my platoon were very good. In fact, one of them, he played for Newcastle United. Tommy Walker, and he was just about ready for the mob. But that was one of the things there in the barrack rooms, and the NCOs, corporals in charge of the barrack rooms were very good. And the thing was, we'd reached a stage then, we'd been so trained that it just came automatically to do our room chores, get the barrack room up to scratch. And the NCOs didn't have any problems, really, you know. They made it a detail every week. They used to change the detail, the barrack room detail every week. And you just look, I'm on fires next week, or I'm polishing the floors next week, or I'm doing dusting. And you knew that you had to do it. And if you didn't, you were letting your room NCO down. And if you let him down, he'd give you a quick kick up the bracket.
Now, how about the other soldiers, you know, the other ranks, you know, the riflemen?
Once again, there was a similarity with recruit training where you hung together. everybody had been trained to work as a team, and that was the whole essence of soldiering in a battalion. You worked as a team, and
there must have been a range of ages though this time. Did you get on with the different? Because you know you
we. Well, that's right. Well, very briefly, as I said before, the 2nd Battalion were losing all the wartime chaps who were considerably older than we were. A lot of these guys were in mid-20s, some early 30s. So we didn't have much experience with them, because as they went out, new recruits came in. The battalion was being... all these chaps were being replaced.
Now, did you get many national servicemen or conscripts, however you want to call it?
Well,
National Service, I suppose you could
say. At one stage, just before we left for Gibraltar, in February 47, in my platoon alone, there were six of us who'd been in the same class at school together. It was all young.
They were young conscripts.
That's right. Yeah.
How did so you? To you, there was nothing wrong with them. I mean, you didn't look down on National
no,
Service.
No. Well, not me. I've got nothing but admiration for that, the National Servicemen. To me, it was the finest thing that ever happened to the young people in this country.
And they perform well. And
oh yeah, they trained well. They did the job they were asked to do, and they did it brilliantly, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, one thing I rather let go by was you mentioned river crossing was one of the things C Company
That's
did.
Right, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, we used to go to a place in Wiltshire. In actual fact, it was an island. The name of the place escapes me now.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, we go to this place, and it was an island. It was quite a big, wide expanse of water between the mainland and this island. And we used to teach or demonstrate how the infantry did a build-up to a river crossing. You know, coming from out of cover, getting the boats forward, manning the boats, crossing the river, and then when we got to the other side, deploying when we got onto the hard ground. It wasn't a very long exercise, but it was quite effective.
Now, would you have the young officers with you, with you, or were they watching?
No, everything was done as an infantry platoon or an infantry company, depending on the size of the exercise. But the only people who were watching were the students, all these officers.
The students watched. Sorry, that's what I mean.
Right.
The students weren't taking part.
They weren't taking part. They were just watching what went on. And as we were doing the demonstration, there was an officer with the broadcasting system explaining to them what was happening. Because most all these officers could speak English, like, you know. And then, at a certain stage, we did a battalion attack.
Now tell me about the battalion attack.
The battalion attack was fantastic. It was on a little, it's been well known, this little village. Imber. The village of Imber. Right in the heart of the Salisbury Plains.
I-M-B-E-R.
I-M-B-E-R, yeah, Imber Village.
Now
this
tell me about
was
it.
A target for a battalion attack. The attack would be preceded by an aerial attack. The fighter bombers would come in and they'd blast it. And then we would start a full battalion attack. And all these officers were up on a very high hill. The students watching this battalion attack and everything, they embraced everything. Mortars, smoke, you name it. All went in, artillery, everything. Every support unit was used. And then we would actually go in and do the actual attack, culminating with a bayonet attack through the village, like, you know. There was no enemy in the village because, I mean, everything, all the firing, all the live ammo had to be forward of us, plus of us, you know. But the effect was quite
Now, were you demonstrating street fighting as well within Imber?
No.
And had you been trained in street fighting? I shouldn't, you know.
In street fighting? No. We just went straight through and did a normal battalion attack through the village, and then the other end came through the village, and then, what do you call it, setting up a defence, all-round defence.